Good morning, and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to have once again here on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. So this is your opportunity to call in and ask questions. Can be about trees, shrubs, flowers, ornamentals, edibles, houseplants. Any and all of that is certainly fine. So maybe you have some kind of problem and you need some help. You're not quite sure how to deal with it. Maybe you're thinking about planting something and you'd like to have some suggestions. That's fine too. Any and all of that, all you have to do is pick up the telephone and call us. A number, 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So at any point, you pick up the telephone, give us a call, ask a question. Sandy will try to help you out. Welcome back.
Welcome. Glad to have you here.
I was just thinking about how this certainly is a time when a lot of people are thinking about actually planting perennials. And certainly if you go around to the garden centers, you will find that people have stuff that's attractively priced. So maybe if you're thinking about that, this is actually a good time to do that. How late can you think about planting something like that?
Yeah, it really depends. Probably with perennials, we usually think of the month of September, and I probably, you know, ideally, I'd say the first couple of weeks of September. So we're really at that point. You know, it's just one of those things we just don't know, you know, if we had a better idea what the weather was going to be like. So perennials, I'd probably say September. When we start thinking about trees and shrubs, I wouldn't hesitate to go ahead and plant them even into October. I've planted them as late as Thanksgiving. So you can really do a pretty good job with those woody types of plants and mm-hmm. still plant them fairly late and have good success.
Okay, so if you are thinking about adding some perennials to your home landscape, now is the time to go out there and do it. Anything in particular? You know, I have planted a number of things and they come with instructions kind of about how they would like you to do it, how they would like you to prepare the spot, how right. deep, how big, how, you know, they want you to create a little mound in the center to put it on. And I try to follow the directions and most everything seems to come out okay. I guess I'm just wondering, you know, how carefully do you want to think about preparing your spot that you're going to put that in?
Well, I think it's one of those things. Obviously, part of it depends on the plant. I mean, there are certain plants, I would say, like probably daylilies and some of those that you can do. They take a lot of abuse and they'll still, you know, come through for you. Yeah. But then there are certainly other ones. I was talking about to someone about lavender earlier, and that's a plant that really is. It's a little bit more finicky when it comes to the soil, and it likes a really well-drained soil. So that one's one we have to think a little bit more about. So part of it depends on the plant. But the big thing is it's much easier to prepare the soil, change the soil before the plant's there than to try to do it later. Yeah. So this is a time to sort of think about, especially if you have any perennial weeds. You know, maybe you've had some quackgrass or some of the perennial weeds that have come in. This is the time to really spend some time, prepare the bed, get those weeds out of there, just physically get them out of there. And then you'll have a much better time later on once you plant, and then you don't try to, you know, deal with them afterwards. So that's probably one of the things. And certainly adding compost for most plants is really a pretty good idea to help the drainage as well as nutrients. And certainly if you have high clay content soils, if you have a lot of clay, this is a time to be adding compost. Something along those lines is really going to help you in the long run so you can get that better drainage. And for most plants, they're going to really appreciate that.
Okay. We have a couple callers here. Let's talk with them. And we'll start with someone in Urbana. Line number one.
Good morning.
Yes, hi.
I've got an impatience question. I've got two impatience beds where I've been planting impatience for so long I can't remember how many years it's been. The last few years, it'll start with one plant. It'll kind of wilt. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon the one next to it's doing it. And they don't really recover. Mm-hmm. And other than not planting impatience there, do you have any idea what I can do or what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever dug the plant up or pulled the plant up to kind of investigate what's going on with the individual plant?
No, I have sometimes removed them and just thrown them away thinking that those ones are causing the problem and maybe it won't spread, but then it just seems to anyway.
Right, right. So I guess what I would wonder and what you might, and I would think you'd still have certainly some out there now, that I'd just, you know, pull some up and maybe dig some up and really investigate, because I'd almost bet what you'll find is either the roots have rotted or the stem itself has rotted.
Well, the stems do seem to kind of, when they really get to that wilt stage and really get bad, the stems do kind of fall apart.
like they just fall over or?
Well, they'll just break into sections or something. Just, the whole thing just kind of crumbles.
So there may be some issues there. And you know, sometimes it's, you know, certainly the plants that have come in that way. But a lot of times it has to do with the site and how well drained the soil is. We were talking about drainage in the soil. And we certainly had a wet year, although in patients like that to some extent. But even they, you know, if it's really extremely wet, and I don't know what your soils are like, if you had really high clay content soils, sometimes it sort of sets up this environment where they get these root rot diseases.
Yeah.
And then once they get this root rot, then it certainly can spread to their plants around it, those kind of things. So usually we're thinking about, you know, adding compost or something to sort of change that area a little bit. Usually we don't recommend fungicides because it's usually by the time you notice that it's too late for the plants anyway.
Okay.
You know, they tend to be already infected if they're going to get it. Okay. So I'd really think about this fall, winter, you know, maybe adding compost.
The one place where it started the first this year, I built it up. It's really well drained, and most of what's there is compost. I put that in this spring.
But then there is some soil in there, too? Or
yeah, there's soil mixed in with it.
Okay, because you don't want to do just straight compost. You really do want soil in there with it.
Yeah,
so
I
it sounds like you
have compost.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've kind of taken care of those kind of situations. But sometimes, I don't know if you're getting the plants at the same spot or just at the same place, but I'd really, you know, obviously check the plants before when you get them, those kind of things. So I don't know that there's anything that you can necessarily do to make sure that it never happens again, to be honest with you.
And you're not familiar with anything that, you know, other people have the same problem and it's this thing that's affecting them and...
Well, they certainly get
in the soil or anything.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
A couple of root rot diseases. Absolutely. There's a couple of root rot diseases that a lot of plants will get.
Okay.
But it isn't something necessarily that you can take care of. It would usually require a fungicide drench early in the season before they're actually infected.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So it makes it a little hard sometimes.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Piatt County for the next caller. Line 4 on the toll-free line. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
I think this might be root rot also, but I had a cantaloupe come up in my compost pile, and it was doing fine on last Wednesday, and when I looked on Thursday, the leaves looked like they'd been sprayed with Roundup, but I still have 4 cantaloupes on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
Will they go ahead and ripen, and then if they do, how would you know they're ripe, and then is that just a wilt also?
Yeah, did you notice anything actually on the leaves,
no,
like powdery mildew, or...
No, they're just brown and curled up.
Usually, I mean, they certainly get some powdery mildew that's out there that certainly will eventually, the leaves kind of brown up and they kind of just hang there. And the vine is still alive, but the leaves kind of just hang there and look horrible.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like powdery mildew, which certainly could be, you know, common. Certainly in a lot of the viney type crops will get powdery mildew issues. As far as whether the cantaloupe's going to go ahead and ripen, if there really isn't much there in the way of leaves or anything, the cantaloupe have done what they're going to do. That's it. There really isn't much else that's going to happen with those. So you could try and pick them. They'll ripen a little bit, you know, after they're picked, but not really much. They're certainly not going to get bigger or anything like that. So you may just want to pick them and see what happens. But if they're really green, as in the underside still looks really green, I doubt that they're going to amount to much.
Okay, and then the second question is, if you go out to the big box stores, they have a lot of really good-looking perennials now. And what would be the latest? I mean, and of course, frost, but, I mean, can you still plant and expect them to be okay this time of year?
The perennials?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Actually, the first few weeks of September is fine for perennials, and I would say even to the third week or so of September. I don't think it's a great idea to plant perennials necessarily clear into October, because because our weather just isn't quite right, and we often get really, really, you know, a lot of rain, and it tends to be really wet, and so they have a tendency to get a little root rot issues. But so I think it's fine. I mean, this time of year, right now, I'd be going out there and taking a look and see what's out there and see what kind of plants you can get. You can usually get some pretty good deals and certainly still plant them.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your help.
All right. Very good. Thank you for the call. Let's talk next with somebody in Paxton. Line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about grass seeding. We've got some pretty weedy patches in the lawn that I'd like to get rid of. If we use Roundup, can we then seed directly into that area?
Yeah, usually we recommend that with any of those non-selective, like, you know, Roundup Cleanup, any of those, the glyphosate-type products, that you certainly can go ahead and spray those areas. And again, those are non-selective. They're going to kill the good grass as well as the bad grass, anything that's in there. And then usually what we recommend is that you let that go ahead and brown to see if you have to do a second application. If you're pretty sure and you think you've got a pretty good kill on that, then you certainly can go and reseed right into it. Once the spray is dried and all that kind of good stuff. But no, you can seed right into it once the weeds are dead.
We should maybe wait a week or week and a half after.
Yeah, usually it depends on what you have in there. If you have some really hard to kill stuff, like, you know, if you had a lot of creeping Charlie or some really tough weeds, quack grass, some of those are really tough, and bindweed might be another one that's really hard to kill. Those I'd probably wait a week or so, you know, spray, wait a week or so, make sure you get a good kill. If you don't, then you can reapply it. If they seem to be, you know, sprouting up again, then you can go ahead and reapply it, and then you could go ahead and reseed into that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Very good. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month, always on Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have a question, call us, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. One of the things I was wondering about is if you have some of these problems with wilts or root rots or those kinds of things, whether you can help address that by looking at the conditions on the ground at the base of the plant to make sure that you have good air circulation. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a lot of sort of dead stuff there down at the base of the plant, maybe, I guess I'm thinking about perennial. So it could be stuff from the previous year or leaves or whatever that sort of collects there. Would it be a good idea to try to clean that up? Mm-hmm. Particularly, I guess, again, the thing I'm thinking about is getting good air circulation so it doesn't, you don't have a lot of this wet, decaying organic stuff choking around the base of the plant.
And you're absolutely right. Any of that kind of stuff that keeps in that moisture, you know, we like that normally in July and August when it's really hot and dry. But, you know, this year we haven't seen that. We've seen a lot more of this wet weather, and you're absolutely right. So if there's lots of mulch, you know, right next to the crown of the plant, that's generally not a good idea. Yeah. If there's certainly a lot of old leaves or whatever, and especially a lot of those old leaves, that, you know, a lot of these diseases are fungal diseases. And so, you know, those fungi are going to hang out on those old dead plants and those dead leaves. And so sort of cleaning that out and as you say, getting good air circulation can help a lot, especially with a lot of leaf disease problems. We've seen a bunch of those this year with leaf diseases on trees. We have apple scab on crab apples, and, you know, we've seen a lot of leaf disease. So air circulation is generally a good idea when it comes to these fungal diseases as well. So there are certainly some things you can do, but not over mulching, which is maybe the other thing I should have mentioned with the impatience, is just to make sure you don't do a lot of heavy mulching, especially right next to the crown of the plant. That's generally not a good idea.
All right. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Let's talk with somebody in Charleston. Line number two right here. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions, one related to iris and one related to clematis. Mm-hmm. First of all, the iris. I noticed this year that I have iris borers, and I've dug up the plants and found the little guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if I've had those in years past. It seems like some of the same characteristics that an iris plant shows when it's infected with an iris borer I've seen in previous years, but iris do come back. So my question is, do I need to get these guys dug up, wash them in the bleach wash, and plant them in a different location? Or will they somehow survive and evolve and come back in spite of this iris borer?
Well, iris borer actually is something that certainly could kill off the iris patch eventually if you got high enough populations, because they eat the rhizome itself, and if there's nothing there, often irises are producing those new rhizomes fast enough that you still have a few, and maybe that's what you've noticed over time, is that you still have a few irises. It's just they're not as nice as they used to be, or full, or whatever. So you certainly don't have to replant in another spot. What I would suggest is, it sounds like maybe what you've done already is to dig those iris up, really look for the caterpillar that's in there. At this point, they really should be the point where they're pretty well gone. You'll probably see the mushiness in the rhizome itself, but the caterpillar is kind of on its way out to become an adult. So that part, because usually around the 1st of September or so, we'll actually start seeing the moths flying, and they're actually laying their eggs about now. And you probably won't notice the moth so much, because it's kind of a brownish kind of one you'd never notice. So generally that's why we recommend that in the fall you actually remove that foliage. And this is something that you see grandmas always did this. You know, they removed the iris foliage late in the season. And, you know, I never thought too much of it. But really, they knew all along, I guess, that's one way to get rid of those eggs from the iris borer. Okay. Is to cut those leaves off in the fall and then get them out of there. So cleaning up the rhizomes, like you've talked about, certainly can help. And then removing the foliage, which generally is what we do when we replant them anyway, is, you know, to cut them down. You certainly want to leave it maybe about 4 to 5 inches or so. But
okay, I can do that. Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
The clematis. And I have several varieties of clematis. The only one I can recall is the Jack Manny, but I have several that include large purple flowers, white flowers, pink flowers, and, of course, the Jack Manny, the small purple. And it seems like every season they come on really strong in the spring, climb right up the arbor, bloom vigorously, and then they get crispy and die, all
right.
of them.
Right.
And if I cut them back and cut all the dead off, then they'll come back. They'll send up new shoots and come back. And I've done that, and two of them are now producing flowers again. But is there a way that you can keep that vine vigorous all season, or is that just part of the life cycle of a clematis?
They kind of, around here, they seem to do that. That seems to be a pretty normal thing where they get this clematis wilt or clematis wilt. And it's just what you say, that by the time they're absolutely looking beautiful, we get some hot, dry winds, they just seem like they just turn completely crispy, but it doesn't kill the plant off. There's a couple of things we do recommend that, and it sounds like you probably have done that already maybe, is when you do plant them, to actually plant them deeper than they were in the pot. You know, make sure that the crown is actually a few inches deep. That helps to protect the crown so they can come back up again. There are some, I think I've mentioned too before, and the Chicago Botanic Garden did a research study. It looked at different types of clematis or clematis and looked at which ones were more prone to wilt than others. And you actually can find that fact sheet online. Just go to the Chicago Botanic Garden website and look. I think it's under education, research, that kind of thing. And you'll come to all their research studies. And it's kind of nice. You can go through and see which ones tend to get it more often than others. And sometimes that's a good idea, to sort of go for those. But unfortunately, it was seemed to be really bad this year, I think,
okay,
maybe
well,
with the wet weather. But there, other than that, there isn't a whole lot of things that I've seen that you can really do. There's a lot of debate on whether fungicides will help, and I think most people are on the realm of fungicides don't really help all that much.
Okay, well, I just want to make sure it wasn't something I was doing wrong or some poor soil condition.
Yeah, no, because if they're still growing well for you, that's not the issue.
Okay, so, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Let's go to next, Champagne, and this is line 3. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have some asparagus that I planted about 3 years ago. I want to move them. Can I transplant them this fall and harvest them next spring?
Yeah, I generally recommend that you actually move them, divide them in the spring. And also, usually after you move them or divide them or plant them, usually we recommend that you don't actually do any kind of harvest until the third year that they're in the ground.
Okay, so next spring, when do I dig them up?
Usually, you know, in April or so, early in the season.
After the sprouts come up?
Yes. Once you see kind of where the sprouts are and stuff, then you can go ahead and divide them and move them.
Now, can I harvest them and divide them at the same time next spring?
Not those particular plants.
Okay. So if I either you harvest or you divide, you don't do both.
Right. Because you want those stems to be able to come up and rejuvenate the division that you just made. Now, maybe you just want to divide some of them and harvest some, you know, leave the original plant of some of it and then harvest off of that and then just take some divisions off the other. Usually there's enough that you can do that.
So you actually could dig down, take parts of the plant, and leave some of it there?
Sure.
Okay.
And then the mother plants, you could go ahead and harvest off of that one.
How deep are they? About 3 or 4 inches?
Well, I don't know how you plant it depends on kind of how you planted them, but they're actually deeper than that, believe it or not. They're probably more like, you probably find them more like 6 to 8, somewhere in there. So they're a little, it's almost like digging up a shrub.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. And let's see, our next person is, this is also someone in Champaign, and this would be line number one. Hello.
Hi. I've got a lot of hydrangeas, and I have the ones that are supposed to bloom on old and new wood, and I have a few that bloom and some that have been in for 3 or 4 years and they've never bloomed. Mm-hmm. Now, I was afraid I was giving them the wrong kind of fertilizer and nitrogen, so I stopped doing that, but that didn't change anything. Mm-hmm. So the only ones that are blooming, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, one of them wilts like crazy because it gets a lot of sun and mm-hmm. wilts, but it blooms like crazy too. Mm-hmm. The other two are in semi-shade called Blushing Bride. They bloom beautifully, and they're in semi-shade. But then I have about 5 more, and they don't ever bloom at all.
And they're in sunshade?
They're in deeper shade, and I don't know whether I should let them wilt because they look so unhappy when they wilt, or should I? I don't know. I'd like them to bloom. I mean, there's right. nice plants, but I don't want just plants. I've got lots of plants.
Right, right.
I want them to bloom.
Right, right. And these are ones that are supposed to be blooming on new wood?
Both
new and old.
Old, yes.
New
yes,
and
yes.
old.
End
yeah.
of summer or forever summer or whatever.
Right, right, right.
They're both.
Right. You know, I because I kind of came up with that, too. I had an endless summer that for like 2 years. How long have they been in there?
Well, some have been in Route 3 and some have been in Route 2.
Okay.
Maybe 4, but I don't think none of them have been in more than 4. But some of them are huge. I mean, I have a huge blue one right off
right.
my kitchen window. It's just gorgeous. But it wilts in the middle of the day like, ugh.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sort of looks unhappy, but it does bloom. But the other ones are iffy.
Okay. And those haven't shown any sign of blooming?
No.
Those
no,
ones
no,
that
no
are
buds, no, no, no. And the plants are vigorous. They're just gorgeous, mm. but that's not what you plant them for.
Right. And now, I assume that, did those die back to the ground this last winter? The ones that aren't blooming?
No. I put a cage around them and fill it full of leaves so they don't get killed off right to the ground. I mean, the tips sometimes get killed off, but not the whole thing.
Okay. So you even had old wood that they could have bloomed on.
Right, right. There's old wood and new wood there.
Yeah, I'm not thinking.
It just drives me crazy because I
don't
can't figure
you.
Out what's wrong with it.
Yeah, yeah, I don't blame you. The thing I did notice with my endless summer, it seemed like it was kind of puny the first few years, and it really wasn't until probably the fourth year that it really, because this is its fourth year, and now it looks great. I was ready to rip it out after at the third year, to be honest with you. I was really ready to rip it out because it didn't bloom on, it took forever for it to bloom. The blooms weren't that big, and I thought, endless summer, this is, you know, the Paris Hilton of the plant world, you know, a lot of hype and not a whole lot of plant. But it really ended up being, you know, after now it's fourth year, I didn't give up on it, it's fourth year, and now it looks pretty good, and
what
it's bloomed beautifully.
What kind of exposure did it have?
It gets east sun, and so it gets shaded in the afternoon.
Okay.
Which
so
I think is best for those guys, to be honest with you.
You don't think that's the problem, the lack of sun?
You know, even in the if it's a deep shade, then I think there might be an issue there. But you're saying that they're vigorous plants. If they were in deep, if they were in deep shade and just plain old weren't growing all that well, then I'd kind of wonder. But I do think hydrangeas do better if they get some morning sun.
This is dapple sun, and
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so you might give them one more year and just go out there, as Dave and I have often said, just to go out there and just tell them, okay, this is it, guys.
Speak strongly to them.
Speak very, very strongly. If you don't do something this next year, then you're out of here. Because sometimes we do get these cantankerous plants that just never want to do anything.
Well, I'll go out and give them a good talking to. And
there you go.
If they don't bloom, I'm going to talk to you again.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
You.
We're at the midpoint here of this part of Focus 580. Sandy Mason, who is definitely not
cool
the Paris Hilton. She's not the Paris Hilton of the plant advising world. No, no, no. She's whoever's the best. The Angelina Jolie of the horticultural world. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here once a month on a Tuesday. We take questions on lawn and garden care. And if you have a problem, or maybe you're looking for a suggestion, a particular spot, a particular plant, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Up next is, would be a Mattoon, line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've had a problem the last couple years with my garlic and onions and old radishes and things that grow underground. And I'm getting ready to plant some garlic either the end of this month or the 1st of October. That's usually when I plant it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if I ought to have my soil tested.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had it tested, and I was just wondering maybe there's something there that why this type of plant doesn't do well. And I'm also curious about it. The garden's around 20 by 40 feet. And do you you take dirt from four or five different areas of the garden, and you mix it all up and put it in a bag, or how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think you really hit upon something. People are truly having a problem in a certain area. I think getting a soil test is a good way, because then you can sort of rule out things. Well, I know it's not the pH or whatever. So you're absolutely right. You don't want to get soil from just one spot and then take that in. You want to get it from usually at least six areas, clean bucket, get a composite from there, get your final sample from there. It usually takes about a half a cup to a cup. It doesn't take a whole lot of soil. And then generally we recommend that you do take it to a soil lab. And usually you can check in the Yellow Pages or online and look for soil testing labs. There's several of them around. And then you can get a good, accurate idea of what's going on in that spot. So that would be one thing. Now, the other thing, you say that the plants, they don't do well. So what is it that they do that makes them not doing well?
The bulbs on the onions and the garlic the last couple of years are smaller than normal,
mm-hmm.
and much smaller than what they were, oh, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I get like golf ball size onions instead mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. larger ones.
Mm-hmm. Do you fertilize at all? Or?
Oh, yes, I fertilize them.
Like through the season?
I put a little topsoil on them that I get from Rural King.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you fertilize through the season as they're growing?
Well,
usually, or?
Maybe once.
Yeah, yeah. Because it could be a fertility thing, certainly, because onions really kind of like that high fertilizer. Could also be, it's one of those things that the pH might have, for one reason or another, gotten a little off, although they're pretty good at taking a wide range of pH, how acidic or alkaline it is. So that's what the soil test will help you with. So if you figured you ruled out all the other stuff, it's not too wet, maybe the fertility needs to be a little bit higher, but that would help you certainly with the soil test. It'll give you some idea what's going on with the fertility.
Well, the lettuce and spinach and green beans and broccoli and tomatoes, they do very well.
Okay. So there's something definitely going on with maybe these underground types of plants, or maybe the starts that you start out with really nice sets where you get your onions. And are you starting out with green onions, or are you starting out with sets, the bulbs themselves? Or?
Well, I get some small bulbs, usually red, white, and yellow.
Right.
And plant about a row of each.
Right.
I plant them fairly close together and then pull for table onions and then let them in between and then try to get some big bulbs out of them.
So they get pretty good size.
Well, they used to.
Yeah. And then when do you plant them normally?
Well, the garlic I usually plant about this time of the year,
right.
In late September, early October.
Right.
But the onions, early spring.
Okay. Well, I think a soil test would be a good idea for you, because it sounds like you've taken care of a lot of the other things as far as timing and all those things. But I definitely maybe look into that soil test to see if maybe that's what's going on for you.
Well, you mix all that dirt together from four or five, six places.
Yes, and then you get your final sample from that.
And it's all mixed together.
Yep.
Okay. Do you know where any place in Coles County?
In Coles County, I'm not sure. With this being an agricultural state, there's usually plenty of the soil testing labs that do agricultural soils and also do, you just need to tell them it's for a backyard garden. I'd check you with their local extension office. They may have some addresses for you. But usually it's in the Yellow Pages or something under soil testing.
Okay, well, thank you.
Uh-huh, good luck.
Very good. Let's go next to Tuscola, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I was just going to do something a little bit different. I was thinking about putting cherry tomatoes in like a planter box and hang them on a fence. Now that you see these things on television where these hanging tomato plants, I was wondering if that's something that's reasonable to do and how much dirt these boxes would have to have in it to try that.
Yeah, usually with tomatoes, we say at least 5 gallons of soil.
5 gallons?
Yep, yep. So it's going to have to be a really big window box. I mean, you certainly can grow them in containers. That's certainly doable, but usually 5 gallons is going to be your minimum. So, like, thinking about a 5-gallon bucket or something along those lines.
I've got extremely rich soil.
Right.
And then fertilizing it, I mean, because I compost it, and it's, in fact, it's almost, sometimes I consider it almost too fertile.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about doing something a little bit, you know, unique, different.
Right.
By making long boxes. I was just wondering what size, you know, or how about the depth? Because that would be, I was thinking something about a foot deep, but.
Yeah, I think that the foot deep would be fine, as long as they have good drainage and you have good soil in there. But again, sort of you can think of 5 gallons, you know, of soil per plant. They need that kind of soil volume, because the biggest part is that if you have a really small soil volume, which is the problem I have with these things that hang, is that a lot of those just don't have enough soil volume, so you have to water all the time, and then if the tomatoes are under stress, then they don't flower very well.
I got an automatic watering system.
Oh, well, there you go.
Tubes to where it's driven at a certain flow rate, you know, so that I've got that under control.
Well, that'll help.
A bigger issue.
Yeah,
you know,
so that'll help.
Something up in the air. Okay, well, I was just wondering.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right, thank you. And again to Bourbonnais, line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a tomato problem and a fern problem. And long about May, I bought myself a nice fern. It's Matuchia struthiopterus. And I put it in a nice shady corner under the old walnut tree.
Mm-hmm.
And for like, you know, a month and a half or 2 months, it was happy as pie. And then one day I looked out there and it had kind of, some of the fronds have died,
mm-hmm.
and they were black kind of, and the ones that survived are kind of withered looking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
what happened?
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure which fern you have here, so sorry. Was there a common name with this one too? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's ostrich fern.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I guess a couple things I'd wonder. So you know that it didn't dry out too much.
Well, I watered it when I thought of it.
Okay. Because they are a little bit finicky. All the ferns are a little bit finicky. And you said you planted it underneath the walnut tree?
Yeah.
I don't know about ferns. That'd be one I'd really have to check. You know, there are some plants that will not grow under walnut trees.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
You know,
so
I
don't know.
Happy for a couple of months.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. That's why I wonder if it wasn't a water issue. Usually, if plants are not happy underneath walnut trees, they just really stunted and they just look like they never flourish, is usually what you'll see. So I would really wonder about a watering issue. Ferns are kind of funny in the sense that they're not very forgiving. You know, if they dry out once, you know, a lot of plants, they dry out once, they're fine. They'll come right back up and, you know, you don't really notice anything. But ferns are definitely one of those. If they dry out too much, even once, they show it, as in brown fronds and the whole thing. And especially if it's a new plant and not well established, doesn't have a root system, sometimes you'll see it much more obvious in a young plant like that. So I'd wonder about the water issue.
Okay, well, it's entirely possible that that's it, because I was...
So I wouldn't give up on it.
What should I do?
Well, I would just continue. If we get into a dry spell, I would continue to water. If it seems like it's still, you know, halfway alive there, I would just continue to water it. It would be one of those things I would really check in. I'm just not sure on ostrich ferns whether they'll grow underneath walnut trees or not. But that would, you may find out real quick if they're going to grow under there. But I'd really watch the watering. Once we get into frost and all that kind of stuff, you're not going to have to worry about it so much. But I'd really make sure it doesn't go through another dry period.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I need all the fronds I can get, so.
Yeah.
Lowest form of humor. Thank you very much.
Okay. Liked it.
We got line number 1 here in Paris. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a question about, I'm not sure whether they're called magic lilies or surprise lilies.
Either one or either one.
All right. I've got some that have surprised me by growing in the wrong place, and I want to transplant them.
Yeah.
When and how should I do that?
Yeah. You can actually do that now if you want to. If you figure out where they are. Usually there's enough of the flower stem left that you can figure out where they are. But you can divide those and move them around, and they're really pretty durable plants.
Okay. So any time now would be okay.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. And again, here to Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got a carpenter ants in my maple tree question. I've got a big maple tree, 50 years old, about shoulder high. There's a cavity with about a fist-size opening, and the carpenter ants have been busy in there for a long time. I can't see that it's doing any good. Should I just throw one of those bug bombs in there and kill them all off, or let nature go?
Yeah, I'm not sure. As far as carpenter ants in a tree, we don't really worry about it too much because generally they're going to be eating all the, you know, any nest that they're going to create is going to be within the heartwood, which is the part that's really not alive anyway on big trees. So we generally, they're not really hurting the tree, I guess is what I'm saying. They're just taking advantage of a nice spot. I guess the thing we do worry about a little bit, especially if it's near your home or something, then we get a little bit concerned about carpenter ants that they might decide to move somewhere else, like into your house or garage or whatever. So that's when we worry about them. Most. If it's out in the back, but the tree's out in the back 40, I'm not sure I'd worry about it too much. Near your house, you may want to think about controlling them. I wouldn't use the bug bomb idea. I don't know if you could actually spray that area, but there are some ant sprays that you certainly could use in that hole or in that area. That would probably be one way. And again, I'd really only consider controlling them if it's something that's near a building.
Okay. I just wondered. Thank you very much.
Right, sure.
Very good. We have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit more, in this hour of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and we're taking questions on lawn and garden care. So if you have a problem, you have a question, give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Is there anything in particular that you would want to mention because we're at the right time?
Yeah. I think probably the seeding your lawn. If you're going to do any seeding, this is the time to do it. And usually we say through the middle of September. So you just really don't want to wait too late, you know, because then the poor grass seedlings come up and then we get, you know, hit with a cold spell. So if you really need to be doing some seeding, this is the time to do it. And maybe you want to even think about overseeding, where you actually thicken up the lawn, especially if you've had a lot of weed issues, especially like crabgrass or some of the annual weeds. We know that those weeds are going to come in whenever you have open areas. If there's open soil, you're going to get weeds. So deal with it now. Get some good grass seed in there and don't have those open areas. And then you'll find that your weed issues will be a lot less. So dealing with it that way instead of just always looking at herbicides can really help immensely. So this would be the time to do that, certainly. If you have peonies, if you want to move peonies, this is the only time we say to actually move and divide peonies is around the 1st of September. They don't do well if you do spring divisions. Unlike a lot of plants where we say spring or fall, peonies are really the only ones we say in the fall. So that would be the other one. I'd get out there and do that.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the phones here. Someone in Paris, line one. Hello.
Yes, I had a question for the lady there. I have a beautiful hard maple tree that is behind my home, and we have built onto the home and done quite a bit of excavation around it. And my maple tree that is probably 40 years old is prematurely turning and prematurely losing its leaves. Mm-hmm. So I'm afraid I have some root damage, extra root damage to it. I wondered if you would suggest pruning it in the early spring to help me on that, to keep me from losing it.
Yeah, I think anytime you have the kind of building around trees, sometimes it's tough. And that early fall color can mean stress, that they're under stress for some reason or another when they start turning early. And I don't know, had it turned early in the past? Some of them just genetically.
Not normally.
Okay, so this is something different. Okay, so
it's a hard maple with the small leaves, and it doesn't usually turn early.
Okay,
you know?
Okay. So this definitely is showing some stress. I really wouldn't think about pruning so much. What I would think about is that if there's anything you can do in the area that's remaining, you know, certainly mulching, you know, watering during drought periods, just think about some good maintenance things. And then I really wouldn't think about pruning. I would wait and let the tree figure out what branches it can't keep. In other words, it'll show you next spring. A certain branch will just not leaf out. And then you'll know that would be the branch to cut off.
Okay, so not necessarily pruning. Just as it loses branches, take them off.
Right, because we have to think about those limbs that are still alive. Those are, you know, that's food reserves for the tree and for the plant. So you don't want to remove those food reserves just as it's going through stress. So let it figure out, you know, how it's going to sort of deal with the stress of maybe losing some roots. And you may find that next year it does much better. But I think over the next year, you're really going to have to sort of watch it. You may want to think about fertilizing it next spring, but definitely think about watering during drought periods, and mulching is going to help.
And that will help. Surface watering and mulching will help it, though.
Yes, that certainly that's going to help, because that's really, if you think about it, the roots are really at the close surface of the soil. They're not as deep as people might think.
Okay. Now, I have put some fill in around this, maybe be 6 or 7 inches of fill around it. Will that be, could that be causing a problem? Mm-hmm.
So when you say fill, you actually mounted it up over the trunk?
No, just as the building project took force, the house got closer to the house, so there was a need for some elevation elevation of the house.
Yeah, maples are a little bit more tolerant of that. Normally we would say, you know, not to do that, but that certainly is another stressor that's going to have on the plant, because now you've changed the whole dynamics of where those roots were, and the air and water penetration that they had at that one level now isn't the same.
Oh,
so
okay.
Now you've changed all that, and so it's definitely another one of those stressors that you've added to the whole thing. So I think at this point, obviously, there were things you had to do, but at this point, I'd really just think about some good maintenance things and see if you can get it through this next couple of years and see if it can. Maples are a little bit more tolerant of that, certainly, than oaks and some of the others.
And what type of fertilizer would you recommend in the spring then?
I would just go with just a 12-12-12, 20-20-20. I mean, just a regular kind of full analysis kind of fertilizer. And again, you may be one of those things you just really want to look at and see how it goes.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah,
all
good
right,
luck.
So thank you. On to another call here, Tazewell County, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Got a fertilizer question. I've got some azaleas and rhododendrons. Is it too late to fertilize them? Can I go ahead? What do I need to do about them?
Yeah, as far as too late, I think probably at this point, I might wait just a little bit longer, maybe more like the 1st of October or so for some of those. You don't want to encourage any new growth, and it probably won't happen, but, you know, we just don't know. So I'd probably think more like in October or certainly in the spring, either one.
Okay, so after there's no chance of them or minimal chance of them growing.
Then. Yeah, you just don't want to encourage any new growth that's just going to get hit with a cold spell. So, but it's fine for a fall fertilization.
Is that generally true of all other plants, or is there something I should watch out for?
It's pretty much true for all the woody plants. Certainly, you know, sometimes we actually do fertilize our lawn this time of year, which is a little different story on some of the herbaceous stuff like that. But generally on woody stuff, I'd probably wait until 1st of October or so, or at least wait until next spring.
Well, it's nice to know that I'm not late on something.
See?
Thank you.
Sure.
Right. Bye. On to Tarot, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've had a question about establishing Oregon grape holly, Mahoney aquifolium.
Mm-hmm.
Love the plant. Have seen it, you know, established vines here in Terre Haute in urban setting next to a brick wall surrounded by concrete. Seems to be very hardy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have real problems getting established. Any hints?
So you've tried it before and it didn't work very well for you, or?
Yeah, I do landscaping work, I've probably lost 50% of what I've planted over time, and I just keep on using it because I don't learn quickly enough.
we always think we have it figured out. That's usually where I think I have it figured out this time.
Beyond that, I just like to plant too much.
It's
so pretty and so much seasonal quality to it.
Right.
And yet, it just doesn't work. And I'm wondering if you have any particular hints or why it would live so well in such an adverse environment and yet not be so difficult to establish.
Yeah, I think the Oregon grape holly or Mahonia, people might have seen it listed. I think a couple things that I've certainly, you know, read about it is the fact that it tends to like a more acidic soil. It does better under more acidic conditions. It's a lot like, it actually even kind of, as you know, kind of looks a little bit like holly, but it likes a lot of the same sort of conditions as it likes the moist soil, but not overly wet soil. If it's like super wet, to may not do so great. It's another one of those that probably doesn't really like a lot of wind in the wintertime necessarily. So it's I think there's few things, if you can think about even like a rhododendrons and hollies and a lot of those broadleaf evergreens, it's the same kinds of things that we run across. So moist soil, acidic soil, not a lot of wind, maybe in a little bit more protected area, like you're saying, next to a brick wall or something where it actually is going to get some of that heat from those kind of areas is good. But that moist soil, I think, is going to help too. So it may be one of those things that it really, they're a little finicky in the very beginning, but as you say, once they get established, then they're pretty tolerant of a lot.
Okay.
So maybe that'll help.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks.
Keep trying.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
We have certainly have time for a couple more callers. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that now it's, if you're thinking about planting perennials, now is a good time because you go around to the garden centers, you see the people who have plants, they're trying to move them.
Yeah,
they want
right,
to get them out
right,
of there.
Right.
And at the same time, and I bought some hosta a couple weeks ago and planted them, there were still annuals. And
yeah,
first of all, I'm thinking, okay, who plants annuals now? But now I'm thinking, well, if you'd still like to have some color around for as long as you can, then maybe the question is, what's the hardiest, the toughest thing that you could think of? So if you were going to do that, you'd get the most life out of that
could. Sure. Well, probably the one that people might think of and certainly showing up in the garden center are the pansies and violas and all those, because they certainly tolerate cold weather very well. And sometimes you'll get them to come back the next year, but usually what I've seen, even those that they say are winter hardy, I haven't seen them come back all that terribly well. But you'll certainly get them well into, you know, well through October into November, you know, depending on what kind of weather we have. So you get a nice long period with pansies, violas. Probably a lot of people may see their flowering cabbage, flowering kale. All those will take cold weather very well. And those would be some nice ones that you'd certainly go ahead and put out with the pansies or whatever. And they do very nicely. So there are a few plants out there. It's actually even a few, maybe some perennial type plants that people actually go ahead and put in containers, like some of the coral bells and some of those that actually will maintain their foliage for a long period of time. And they kind of act like an annual in some respects in a container, and then you can go ahead and plant them out later. So those might be a few things that I can think of that you're starting to see in the garden center. Certainly mums are one of those that sometimes they act like annuals these days because they don't always come back as well. But those would be a few things that are you're starting to see fresh and new. If there were things out there like impatiens and some of those that maybe are for sale now, you know, they're not going to tolerate cold weather. So you're talking about if we're lucky, you might get a month out of those. So even some of the, you know, ones that we typically would think of as annuals, you'd get probably a month out of them. So kind of depends on what you're looking for.
So those things like the things that they sell, that they, like icicle violas, those things that they say will flower in the fall and then will come back again and will flower in the spring. Is your experience is, well,
that's my opinion. That's what I've tried them several different ways. And maybe there are folks out there that have had better luck, but they seem like they just completely, what I would say, melt out, as in they just rot off. And so I don't know whether it's maybe where I had, or maybe it depends on how much snow there's been, those kinds of things. But my experience has been with those that they don't come back the next year.
Yeah, okay. So. All right, let's go to Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Now, I just recently tuned in because I'm driving my car. I know you're not supposed to talk on your phone when you drive on the car, but I got a quick question.
Pull over. Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, you may have answered this, so I apologize. But this has to do with planting shrubs now, because right now in the nursery, sometimes they have new shipments coming in. Last year, I purchased viburnum and some spirea, and I'm not sure if you pronounce it weigelia or however you ever say that. And I planted them in the fall, I think in September or October, and they did pretty well. The weigelia didn't make it, but the rest looked great in the spring, and they look fabulous. Now, my question is about fertilizing, because I just heard you say about fertilizing in the fall versus the spring. What about when you're planting things for the first time in the fall? Do you fertilize at that time, or should you just let it
Right, right, right.
Fertilize in the spring, or what's the best thing to do in that case?
Yeah, I guess when it comes to the woody type plants, you know, trees and shrubs, there's some debate out there. Certainly, with the if you have a shrub that you know needs a more acidic soil, say you were planting rhododendrons or something like that, I would definitely think about fertilizing, you know, with or using sulfur, not really fertilization, but sulfur, something to change the pH. Or
I burnt my rhododendron by fertilizing.
A little bit too much, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would certainly, if you have a plant that you know needs certain soil, I would certainly deal with that at planting time. The other ones, I think, for the most part, I think we've kind of, you know, we used to always say, you know, fertilize them when you first plant them. But I think a lot of times we've kind of gotten away from that, to be honest with you, and thinking more about giving them some time to get established before we actually do the fertilization. So actually doing it in the spring, if you feel like it's necessary. If you have halfway decent soil and, you know, you feel like, or maybe you add some compost at planting time, I'm not sure I'd worry about fertilizing it too much. And again, unless you know it needs some particular conditions.
And I think also, don't the nursery plants in general have fertilizer in the pots already?
A lot of times, of course, by now that may have already, you know, gone by the wayside, but a lot of times they'll have that time release stuff and you'll see the little ball like things in the soil. Yeah. But a lot of times that only lasts 3 to 4 months. And so that's probably gone by the wayside. But often, obviously, when they're being grown in the nurseries and stuff and then shipped out, they've been fertilized. Okay. So they've already had a fertilization for that year.
All right. I think I'll just fertilize in the spring.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best bet.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
great.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Well, there we'll have to leave for this time around. Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. There is someone like her all over the state. Just look in your phone book. You can get this kind of advice from your local extension person. If she's the one for you, you know, you can call her. Otherwise, depending on where you live, it's a different sort of a person, but they're there. And also, you might want to look for her and others on the program that we have called Illinois Gardener. It's on WILL-TV Thursday nights at 7, and it's a live show, and there are opportunities to call in and ask questions. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you.
Very good.
Like the end of summer, huh? It,
yeah, I guess. Well, we'll see you in
October.
All right.
Oh, well.